Hi everyone, I'm Gary Noem. Nice to have you with us today. Today we're going to find out about what's in broccoli that can help us prevent cancer. This is from Chambuk National University in South Korea. We have a lot to share, really good information to live a longer and healthier life. Then I'll also remind people that there are natural approaches to building up our immune system. No matter what we face, bacteria, viruses, different types of diseases. So some information that can help all of us. But specifically how to protect your upper respiratory tract system. I'll share that today. Also today, continuing with our challenges to what we consider the utter corruption, misinformation, half-truths concerning coronavirus. Professor Dolores Cahill, one of the smartest scientists in the world, a short segment of what you should know that's new and truthful. Dr. Mike Yeadon, Yeadon, how the government is using a COVID-19 test with undeclared false positive rates. I've been saying from day one, at least 100 shows, that you cannot have a government policy, for example, that is so draconian, so totalitarian, so police state-minded to keep people in quarantine, to close businesses, if the study you're basing all this on is itself flawed. And it is absolutely, positively, unequivocally, 100% that there is no gold standard test. The tests they've been using, the swab test, the PCR test, are not giving us an accurate and complete picture of a person's viral load, the type of virus they're measuring, because the tests don't determine that. So then why would you have all these draconian policies if your tests, the very foundation, are flawed? Now, thousands of scientists and physicians around the world are seeing the truth and they're joining forces. We will take you to Berlin to a brand new meeting of a new group called the World Doctors Alliance. Doctors from all over the world. We're not talking about any alternative doctor, strictly orthodox doctors, scientists, and they're meeting. They're joining forces. One group alone in Germany has over 1,000 medical doctors, and it's growing because people are facing the fact that every government is corrupt. Every politician in these governments are influenced by outside interest. The information they're giving is political, ideological, and not science, not public health. We, the people, have had enough. We're standing up and we're fighting. And I'm giving you that information. We are the only place that's giving you this information. You will not find another radio or television program that has any audience. I'm not talking about podcasts. That is standing up to this corruption. And it's massive. The greatest public health scandal in world history. And I'll give you an insight from one of our listeners who, at 40-some years old, developed the COVID virus, got very sick, and what he did to help himself. So therefore, I'm giving you some insights as well from an article I wrote. I reposted the article on PRN.fm so that you'll know what is natural and non-toxic that you could do to protect yourself. The very thing that they said not to do is the very thing you should do. They didn't want you knowing anything you could do to help your immune system. No one. You didn't see the Surgeon General. You didn't see that little punk Anthony Fauci. You didn't see any of these dancing clowns telling you what you could do. Wait for the vaccine. Wait for the expensive drugs. My God. This is Germany 1934. We've gone past 1932. I am really concerned about what I see. The liars on CNN, the highly educated and completely duplicitous editors at the New York Times. We're in a coup, people. That's not conspiracy theory. That's fact. And I'll go through some of that today, showing you how official policy is now Facebook is not allowing any information, truthful scientific information, that warns you about what is wrong. But they are willing to tell you everything that the government says, corporations, big industry, vaccine industry said is right, but they're wrong. So where are you going to get your information? Also, Robert F. Kennedy today on this program talking about do not trust the medical or national security establishment, end quote, his words, do not trust the medical or national security establishment. So you see, these are serious programs, but we always start with the best on health and healing. The most notable compounds present in broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables like kale, mustard, radishes, Brussels sprouts, asparagus, are sulfur-containing glucosinolates, which are converted, once you eat them, into your body, into isothiocyanates. Why is this important? Because these isothiocyanates are the most powerful natural anti-cancer properties that you can consume. And they're not only capable of inhibiting the growth of cancer cells, but also inducing apoptosis, or programmed cell death. When you eat broccoli, you're causing your cells the potential to self-destruct, your cancer cells, to commit suicide. And this was proven yet again. There are hundreds of studies on this, but I just want to keep reinforcing how important this message is with a brand new study published in the Chilean Journal of Agricultural Research, a peer-reviewed journal. And the South Korean researchers investigated the changes in the concentration of these glucosinolates and the total phenolic and flavonoid content and the antioxidant activity, meaning all the good stuff that occurs during the development of broccoli florets grown in just an open field. And they found that these, when you eat them, preferably steamed, if you steam or saute them, you're breaking down the cell, making it easier for the nutrients to be absorbed. So broccoli's phytochemical content is very, very beneficial. And that's why you should have broccoli on a regular basis. Separately from Augusta University and Medical College of Georgia, if you don't have enough vitamin C, that is not good for respiratory viral illnesses. What do I mean? It's very simple. Low-level vitamin C is bad. It can make you more prone to COVID-19 infection and severe disease, and could help explain some disparities. This is according to the scientists at Augusta University and the Medical College of Georgia. It could also explain why some patients feel long-term effects from the infection, like fatigue, which could be linked to a type of accelerated aging. Now, what is the good news? The good news is something that many of you, probably most of you, already am applying. Large doses of vitamin C orally every day throughout the day, ideally about every 3 hours. And high doses of vitamin D as well. Vitamin C has long been shown to help boost your immune system. And many patients with COVID-19 were given the supplement early in the pandemic when there was a lack of effective therapies. There are at least 30 clinical peer-reviewed trials listed in clinicaltrials.gov. That's the official website of the government that shows you legitimate trials. I looked at all 30. Now, what do I find? Looking at vitamin C as a therapy where in combination with other supplements and drugs to treat COVID-19 or prevent infection or subsequent damage, though many have yet to begin or just underway. And what I'm finding is that if you do not have enough vitamin C, if you're deficient, low levels of vitamin C, that is very important because it's suspected to play a role in many disease processes, from scurvy to chronic conditions like diabetes and hypertension, and levels have been shown to decrease with age. And it could help explain why the elderly are suffering far more severe disease and deaths from COVID-19. Let us be very clear. For the 100th time, COVID virus is real and it is deadly. It kills people. It has killed tens of thousands of people. But the people that is principally killed, not exclusively, but the vast majority, have been people with comorbidities. So what we should be doing, if we really want to help the whole world, we should focus a lot of attention, resources, and new protocols, both for prevention and treatment, on emphysema, heart disease, cancer, weakened immune system, obesity. These five I just mentioned are the principal comorbidities that make you a greater susceptibility for being infected with COVID. Now, to die from COVID, you would be in the older group and sick for a long time, meaning you were dying. Now, every year we have a large number of people who die around the world and die in the United States. When we start looking at, did we have a spike in an excess of deaths from COVID-19 throughout the world? In most cases, the answer is no, which means that in a country like Canada, where you had 3 years that you had, I just saw the figures, 33,000, 40-some thousand, 58,000 people infected with the influenza virus, which can kill you and does, in many cases, anywhere from a low of 30,000 to a high of 80,000 in a year, then suddenly this year we have almost no cases in Canada of influenza, like 14 cases. Well, that's not humanly possible. It's not scientifically possible to go from 33,000 cases last year to 14 cases this year. So, A, several things have happened. One, all cases of influenza have been relabeled COVID-19. Or two, they stopped counting that and made all cases COVID. In either case, it's what we've seen repeatedly, inappropriate or irresponsible or unethical commingling or compounding statistics. For example, taking people who are known to have died of one disease, like cancer, in a cancer hospital and saying they died from COVID. This has been throughout the world. Now countries are reconnecting by going back and re-examining the real cause of death. And already our own CDC has stated that over 35% of all COVID deaths were from other comorbidities. And in some cases, it could be as high as 90%. Also, COVID can be contracted by anybody, but, and here's the caveat, if you have comorbidities, let's say you're morbidly obese and you're 35 years old, yeah, then you can be infected by COVID. You're far more susceptible because your obesity, not your age, and you could die from that. So you should take all infections seriously. But we also know that there are natural nutrients that can help prevent that. There are health programs that can prevent the obesity. And we should be giving emphasis as a Marshall Plan worldwide to get people away from being obese, to get them healthy, normal weight, to get their body's natural immune system stimulated. And there's no medicine that can do that, none. There are medicines that can help block viral replication, like with a nutrient. And again, it's the nutrient zinc with hydroxychloroquine that makes hydroxychloroquine more valuable, because it's the zinc that actually has the greatest impact upon the virus, not the hydroxychloroquine. That's why the combination works so well. So why aren't we suggesting that for our vulnerable people who have comorbidities or the senior citizens who are sick? It's just common sense, but we're not doing it. We should be. And we should be giving everybody vitamin C at higher doses than normal, because that can protect you. And that is why a lot of people are suffering from deaths that otherwise they would not suffer from. For instance, men have been shown to have a higher rate of COVID infection and severe disease, and men generally have lower levels of vitamin C than women. All right, that's just one example. Blacks are typically lower in vitamin C than whites, and blacks have suffered disproportionately from COVID-19 in Georgia and across the United States. In Georgia, for example, blacks make up 32.6% of the population but have 42% of COVID-19 deaths, according to an analysis in the Augusta Chronicle. In Richmond County, where blacks make up 57.7% of the population, the death rate is 85 per 100,000 from COVID, compared to 39.1 in Columbia County, where blacks make up 18% of the population. Here's what they're not looking at. Here is what I have looked at. In the most unhealthy states in America, all but two are southern states: Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana. These have terrible health results historically. Lower, they have greater poverty, they have the worst diets, and there's the highest level of obesity and arthritis and heart disease and cancers in black population and the white population. They both suffer. So wouldn't it make sense to have public health programs to emphasize a healthier diet, clinics set up for free to help people change their lifestyle, giving them the counseling and guidance and health that they need? It's not being done. None of that's being done. And as a result, all we see are infection and in death. Both can be prevented. Because even if you're infected, are you infected because you have a PCR test showing positive? That does not mean that you have an infected state. That's another lie. Probably the largest number of people by far are asymptomatic because they have no active viral participation in their body, because the test is not specific. You could have a 10-year-old cold, and that COVID virus from 10 years ago that the body has killed, it's just residual in your body, having no impact at all. Now you test positive, they say, ah, active case. You're not active. And so they've played with the numbers. This is not unintentional. This is purely intentional. We should be outraged by this. I believe that all the people involved at the policymaking level should be held accountable in crimes against humanity and be brought to justice. Anthony Fauci, the President of the United States, everyone should be brought to justice. This is a crime against humanity. Hundreds of thousands of people have died who none of those people had to die. So I'm just telling you what the fact is. So just in this one case, vitamin C is very important in protecting, and they're not advocating vitamin C. More on that later. From Psychology Today, can meditation help ADHD? And the answer is yes, it can. It can also help memory, reaction time, and attention. That's according to Emory University. They found that Zen practitioners had faster reaction times than control subjects. Skidmore colleagues found that regular meditation was associated with more accurate, efficient, and flexible visual attention processing across a wide variety of tests. The University of Pennsylvania found that subjects attending an 8-week mindfulness meditation course demonstrated significant improvements in selective attention and direction. So everywhere in every university where they're testing meditation, it helps. It can help with the hypoarousal factor, observed in studies examining glucose metabolism, brain blood flow, brain waves. All of this is essential in understanding the stereotypical ADHD brain, which is under-aroused, which is why stimulant medications are used, and I'm opposed to that. If the frontal lobes of the brain are not getting enough activation, they're unable to do their job efficiently or effectively, because the frontal lobes of your brain are very much involved in executive functions like impulse control, sustained attention, and these are skills that are often impacted. Not surprisingly, strategies to manage ADHD often involve waking up the frontal lobes, increasing blood-brain flow, and reducing slow brainwave activity. And therefore, any form of stimulant, exercise, nutrition, cognitive skill training, all of those are good. And at the top of that list has to go focused meditation. So here's the takeaway message for all of you, either suffering directly from ADHD or a child is, get them into meditation. All right? The breathing, the mantra, the visual image. When the mind inevitably wanders from its target, the meditator recognizes this as soon as possible and returns to it, the attention of their target. Essentially, this form of meditation is training the person in skills associated with sustained attention, minimizing distractions, self-monitoring, and promptly redirecting focus. These are the exact skills that are necessary in order for people to have more malleable brain. So if you want the brain to get better at paying attention, the most effective way to do this is to practice paying attention. And meditation allows that to happen. All right? So that's the latest on that issue. Now, we are 23 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back at you. And when we come back, we're going to go to an audio clip. And the audio clip is going to, focus upon, oh, by the way, yesterday, before I forget, I presented an article, a brand new article. Richard Gale and I have added our two cents based upon the science of which botanicals and plants are good against the COVID. All of this information comes exclusively from the Library of Medicine, the government's own repository of high-quality peer-reviewed science. That's the only thing I'm sharing with you. The government's own peer-reviewed high-quality science, and yet not a word of this is being shared by anyone in the government. And that should tell us something. So back in a moment, I'll share that, and then we're going to have some video audios to share with you. What I'm about to share with you has been posted on PRN.fm, our main page, because I'm only giving you the highlights, but it's an in-depth article, fully footnoted, how to protect yourself against all of the different coronaviruses and influenza A and influenza B. So it's a way to protect you, no matter what your age or circumstances health-wise. The information I'm about to share only comes from the Library of Medicine, PubMed, which is the repository of accepted and respected peer-reviewed journals. So this is all science-based. Now we know that there are at least six known strains of coronavirus, four of which are associated with the common cold or moderate respiratory infections. Everyone has likely had a coronavirus infection sometime in their lives. However, two strains, the severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, as well as the Middle East respiratory syndrome, MERS, are more severe. And between the years 2002 and 2004, and then 2014 and 2018, that is when that we had seen that these strains could be lethal. So what we want to do is we want to try to prevent all forms of viral infection in our lungs. And because these viral infections that target the respiratory tract, especially influenza, They are very dangerous. They cause deaths, tens of thousands of deaths per year. So whatever we can do to prevent, all the better. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to start with botanicals, things you can easily purchase that are not expensive, that are known to be safe. And in traditional Chinese medicine, coronaviral infections belong to a specific epidemic disease category. Astragalus is not only a very popular plant used in traditional Chinese medicine, but is also one of the most researched and promising botanical plants. It has very high-quality antiviral properties. It's used in Ayurvedic medicine as well. Astragalus has been prescribed for centuries because of its effectiveness against infections and overstressed respiratory conditions, notably the saponins, S-A-P-O-N-I-N-S. These are the nutrients found in astragalus that also help hinder influenza proliferation. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Avian Disease and Oncology Laboratory found it inhibits avian flu viruses. The Academy of Agricultural Sciences in China conducted a study published in the Journal of Microbiological Pathology, concluded, quote, astragalus exhibits antiviral properties that can treat infectious bronchitis caused by avian coronavirus. And in China, which has a large poultry industry, avian coronaviruses are a serious threat to chicken farmers. And Chinese farmers will often include astragalus in feed to protect the birds from infection, as well as pig feed to ward off porcine circovirus. Also, Beijing University Chinese Medicine completed an analysis of previous research looking at the benefits of Chinese herbal formulas against SARS coronavirus and H1N1, the swine flu. In three separate studies, among participants who took the formula against SARS, none contracted the illness, nor did any contract H1N1 influenza in four additional studies. And what was in the formula? Astragalus. Earlier in February, researchers at Beijing Children's Hospital at Capital Medical University provided a thorough overview of recommended diagnostic procedures and treatments for specific symptoms witnessed in the current COVID-19 infections that included both allopathic and traditional Chinese medicine. And again, they suggested astragalus and ginseng as two primary botanicals. In fact, last week, the prestigious journal Science published a review out of the Yunnan Academy of Agricultural Sciences in China that investigated the great disparities in infections and death rates between different provinces, and Wuhan being the most severe. In the provinces with the lowest infection rate, there was between an 84% to 90% use of traditional Chinese medicine formulas. The main ingredients, astragalus and ginseng. Licorice root in its pharmacological form, which is a glycyrrhizin acid, has been used against hepatitis, upper respiratory tract infections, and with great success. And again, there it's been used against hepatitis B and C with a very rare side effect. And it's been shown to induce apoptosis or in lymphoma cells and Kaposi sarcoma related to herpes virus with great success. And you're talking about the major institutions like Japan's National Institutes of Infectious Disease, that would be equivalent to our CDC. And they investigated several antiviral properties to treat patients admitted with SARS coronavirus infections. Of all the compounds tested, the licorice extract was the most effective. Quote, our findings suggest that glycyrrhizin should be assessed for treatment of SARS. And then you have the Chinese university, Sun Yat-sen University in China, published an article on licorice extract in the Journal of Medical Chemistry from the Chinese Academy of Sciences, looked at over 200 botanical plants in traditional Chinese medicine to find those with strong potencies against the SARS coronavirus. Four stood out. Among the four, licorice, glycer, rhyosin. So it is the most effective against the virus. Then elderberry. Yeah, the old elderberry concentrate. It has great benefit in preventing and treating common cold and flu infections, which are all coronavirus there, and the cold flu. And it's found worldwide. And the most active formula is the Sambucus. Sam, S-A-M, Bucus, B-U-C-U-S, Nigra, N-I-G-R-A. It has the most medicinal qualities. So buy the Sambucus or the elderberry to help you in prevention. I use it daily as a preventative. Has great value against influenza. Hadash University Hospital in Israel found elderberry was effective in vitro against 10 different influenza strains. It lowered all the inflammatory cytokines in the body, like it lowered interleukin-1, tumor necrosis factor alpha, interleukin-6, interleukin-8, all significantly were impacted by the anti-inflammatory, antiviral properties of elderberry. Also, another Israeli study by Hebrew University scientists in Jerusalem, published in the Journal of Internal Medicine or Internal Research, found that those who enrolled with existing flu-like symptoms who took 15 milliliters of elderberry four times a day recovered 4 days sooner and with less severe conditions. So, there's also research showing elderberry's positive impact on coronavirus infections. In 2014, researchers at Emory University knew that elderberry extract inhibited coronavirus's virility at the point of infection. And then one of the better studies came out of the National Sun Yat-sen University and China Medical University Hospital in Taiwan. In 2019, the researchers used an ethanol extract of Sambucus stem, not the berry, and observed its potential against coronavirus strains NL63. So, big time. We should have been giving senior citizens and people with comorbidities elderberry concentrate every single day. I would have put astragalus, vitamin C, vitamin D, echinacea, olive leaf extract, colloidal silver, all in a smoothie and given it to them to drink throughout the day. Echinacea, E-C-H-I-N-A-C-E-A. According to the peer-reviewed journal Pharmaceuticals, research from the University of British Columbia published, quote, all strains of human and avian influenza viruses tested, including Tamiflu-resistant strain, as well as herpes simplex virus, respiratory syncytial virus, and rhinoviruses were very sensitive to a standardized echinacea preparation, meaning it killed the viruses. There's different types of echinacea, and the species Echinacea purpurea, P-U-R-P-U-R-E-A, has the most effect. Also, Echinacea is not going to be as strong as some of the others, but it's very good if you have bacteria also in your body. Olive leaf extract is the most important biomolecule in the olive tree that contributes to its antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer, antimicrobial, and antiviral activities at about 1,000 milligrams. It really works. And by the way, I found 10,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature of the National Institutes of Health database referring to olive leaf extract, olive leaf, and olive oil, and has a strong anti-cancer, antioxidant, and antiviral properties. So that's very important. Oregano is important. There's a chemical in oregano, car, C-A-R, vacarol, V-A-C-R-O-L, carvacarol. It's the phytonutrient in oregano oil that has its antiviral properties. It's been tested against several influenza and flu-like respiratory viruses, and it works. So that's also good. and Soochow University in China, University of Oklahoma, University of Putra, Malaysia, 10 randomized double-blind studies published in the peer-reviewed evidence-based complementary medicine, all suggested oregano was beneficial as a throat spray and shown to significantly and immediately give improvement for upper respiratory infectious ailments. University of Arizona published a paper in the Journal of Applied Microbiology showing oregano oil's antiviral properties when used as a sanitizer. And the study found one flu-like virus, rhinovirus, if sprayed on surfaces, just take the spray of the oregano oil and you spray it on any surface, countertop, it kills the virus within 15 minutes of exposure. So that's a good thing. And so you want to remember these are all good botanicals. Now, to these botanicals, I would add vitamin C. Thousands of studies on the properties of vitamin C, but its antiviral properties, very high. Vitamin D, outstanding. Harvard University, Massachusetts General Hospital, Zhiqi University School of Medicine, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, on and on and on. They all have studies. One has 18 studies confirming that vitamin D deficiency was associated with an increased incidence of acute lower respiratory infections, but another shows that vitamin D boosts the body's mucosal defenses, which are critical for protecting ourselves from infectious respiratory illnesses. Harvard had 25 randomized controlled trials involving 11,000 participants confirming vitamin D daily intake significantly cut the risk of respiratory tract infections in half. Then you have N-acetylcysteine. With its antimicrobial, antiviral properties, is good against pneumonia also in helping the lungs. Colloidal silver, again, the Journal of Nanotechnology, University of Texas, Mexico University, all these wonderful places publishing articles. Japan's National Defense Medical College Research Institute published an article in the Journal of Molecular Science recommending that Japanese healthcare workers take nano silver to protect them from viruses, including coronavirus. University of Naples, the same. Freie University in Germany, the same. So I'm concluding by saying that where there are medicines that I've been mentioning on a regular basis, these are orthodox, FDA-approved medicines, some as old as 70 years in practice, that are safe, that can help with the prevention and with the treatment of coronavirus, like hydroxychloroquine combination with an antibiotic and zinc. And actually, the zinc is the superstar in that combination. But there are sprays that can help with medicines, and we're not using them. But doctors and patients who are showing remarkable benefits. So this is just my way of sharing information that I believe that the National Academy of Sciences and the U.S. Public Health Service should have been having a nationwide campaign to get our population to lose weight, to overcome and prevent comorbidities, to keep those people who are at greatest risk in a controlled environment with most the best therapies we know, both traditional and alternative, that could help these people manage or even improve their existing comorbidities, therefore making them less susceptible to being infected by the coronavirus. For the vast majority of the population, the coronavirus has a tiny lethality. Now, can it kill? Yes. When you're infected and you start having symptoms and you run a high fever and you're nauseous and you're throwing up and you feel like you're going to die, yes. You need the best, and that should be a combination of the best medicines and the best alternative and complementary therapies that are proven by the Library of Medicine. So it's not an alternative perspective, it is an orthodox perspective. It just happens to originate to support the complementary and alternative field of health care, with its hundreds of thousands of practitioners and its hundreds of millions of people who use it. For too long, there has been duality and divisiveness, a one-sided coup orthodox medicine run by Big Pharma, protecting its turf. So no matter what proof is provided and proctored, it is rejected. And yet the library of medicine, the ultimate arbiter of what is acceptable, publishes hundreds of thousands of studies. Everything I share on this program comes from the library of medicine. So the irony of it is, the best argument to Orthodox's inflexible, ramrod, rigid ideology of what to do, actually, alternative medicine comes from within its own database and research institutions. It's just neglected or denied. So that's the latest to help all of you at this time of suffering and concern for not being infected, or if you are infected, what are some of your options?
Let's go to the interview with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., number 3. Do not trust the medical or national security establishment. He's being interviewed by Ron Paul. I think you'll find this of interest. Please listen in.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you today.
How are this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing fine, ready and raring to go, and especially because we have a special guest today.
Yes,
very special guest, well-known, and he's going to talk a little bit about the subject we've been talking about. We'll be talking to the expert about vaccines and other things. But our guest is a graduate of Harvard University and University of Virginia, has a law degree, is very much interested in environmental things and litigation against people who don't take care of our environment. And he's spent a lot of time in that. But he's also become known a person of indeed a lot of interest in the vaccine. Robert Kennedy, we welcome you to the program.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Paul.
Well, good. Now, we have a lot of questions for you, so we can flip a coin and take something. But I'm going to start off with something that I've thought a lot about, and you get a lot of questions about. And it's just something before we get into the vaccines. And that is the very, very difficult situations that the Kennedy family had to go through. And I've read most of the books about assassinations and problems, and the viewers are very interested in that. Could you give us a little bit of an idea? Because, for libertarians, the CIA, we're always a little suspicious of. Is there anything that you can say about that? How do you psychologically handle that? Or what are your concerns? I'm sure there's a lot of things you think about that are not factual yet, but you certainly made an effort to try to find out the truth about your dad's killing. And we really respect you for that.
Well, I wrote a book about this and kind of my journey. It's called American Values. And it's really about my family's 50-year, or actually now about 75-year battle with the CIA. And that fight actually started in the mid-1950s when Herbert Hoover, Truman, had asked my grandfather, Joseph Kennedy, to serve on a commission called the Hoover Commission that was chaired by President Hoover to look at the CIA and its role, because, as you know, the CIA, when it was originally chartered, was not chartered to engage in sort of paramilitary activities and fixing elections and murdering leaders and interfering with the business and democracies in other countries. And it was founded and created and with great reluctance from both Republicans and Democrats, because it was thought after World War II, we had an OSS during World War II, and after World War II, OSS was liquidated, because the belief was that secret police organizations were inconsistent with democratic ideals, democracies, with constitutional governance, and that they would grow and that they would end up enveloping and subverting democracy. And, when Americans thought of secret police, they thought of the Stasi, they thought of the KGB, they thought of the Gestapo. And they said, and there were debates about this in Congress when we were, you know, originally launching the CIA. And both Republicans and Democrats said this is not something we should be doing. But when they started it exclusively as an espionage organization, which meant spying. Mm-hmm. It meant intelligence gathering. It did not mean interfering. And so then, you know, Alan Dulles, as you know, kind of manipulated the law and did a lot of kind of backroom deals to get these huge secret budgets and began really engaging in all of the mischief. And my grandfather was on a commission that looked at this and saw what they had done in, you know, when they were overthrowing democracies in Guatemala and Iran and all over the world. And he said, we should dismantle it. We should remove the plans division, which was the dirty tricks division from espionage. And Alan Dulles never forgave him or my family for that. And then when my uncle came in and did the Bay of Pigs, well, and then fired Dulles. So yeah. I always believed that even from when I was a little kid, when President Johnson came into the room in the East Room of the White House, I was standing beside my father when he said to my father that, that Lee Harvey Oswald had just been killed by Jack Ruby. He told my father and Jackie that. And I said to my father, I said, did Jack Ruby love our family? And nobody answered that question. You know, later my father did his own research and found out that he was connected to the mob and to the CIA and to all these. My father's initial belief was the CIA had killed his brother. I always believed that, and I think you'd be an idiot not to believe what the congressional investigation found out in 85, which is President Kennedy was killed by a conspiracy. But I never believed that about my dad. And I just believed that Sirhan, the evidence against him was overwhelming and he had confessed to the crime. There was evidence found in his room. And then Paul Schrade, who was one of my dad's best friends and who was standing beside my father when he was shot, and Paul took a bullet to his head at that time. He took the first of Sirhan's bullets. And he said to me, your father was not killed by Sirhan. And I need you to look at the autopsy report and look at this evidence. And as a favor, I did not want to do that. I didn't want to get into all the conspiracy theories. But as a favor to Paul, because he was such a hero, he was the one who introduced my dad to Cesar Chavez. He was the number two guy at the United Auto Workers and was just a stalwart, you know, friend of our families. I went to his house in LA, outside of LA, and I sat down with him for a couple of days. I went through the autopsy report, all this other stuff. And by the end of that, it was clear to me that Sirhan could not have killed my father.
Wow.
And my father was killed by four shots that were all fired from behind him. Sirhan fired two shots. He was across a steam table. He never got behind my father. My father was always facing him. He was 6 to 10 feet away. And Sirhan fired two shots. The first one hit Paul Schrade. The second one hit a door jamb behind my father, passed right past his head and hit a door jamb. And then he was grabbed by Rosie Grier, Rafer Johnson, and all these other people. And there was a dog pile and they took the gun hand and they pointed it away from my father, but they couldn't get the gun from him. He fired six more shots, and all of those shots hit people. So we know where the shots all landed. There were 14 shots fired, and his gun only had 8. It was a revolver with 8 chambers in it. Uh-huh. It never reloaded. So. And the 4 shots that hit my dad all came from behind, and Thomas Noguchi, who was the greatest coroner in American history, his finding is that every one of those was contact shots, that the barrel of the gun was touching my father at the time they were fired, and they were fired from behind at an upward angle. And, you know, I think the guy who probably pulled the trigger is a guy called Eugene Thayne Caesar, who was a CIA agent. He worked for Lockheed. He was working that night as a security guard. He had gotten the job 4 days before.
Wow.
he was waiting for my father in the kitchen. And when my father went through the Ambassador Hotel kitchen, he grabbed him by his right arm or his left arm and was standing behind him when the shots were fired. And he had pulled his own gun, which was also a .22. And he was seen, and he admitted that he had pulled his gun. But he said, and my father, when my father fell, he fell onto Caesar. And, you know, if you look at the MK Ultra manual about, you know, they have a whole section that the CIA was experimenting on creating these Manchurian candidates. And what the psychiatrists who were working for them said is that it took them a year to turn somebody into a Manchurian candidate, somebody who would actually commit a murder involuntarily. But they said they could make a distractor in 3 months, and they could make it out of anybody. And,
okay, Daniel, we didn't allot for a couple hours, but we could really use a couple hours. This is a great interview.
I just thought you would find that interesting. I had never heard this before, that R.F. Kennedy did his own investigation, and what he found was his father, his uncle, JFK, was assassinated, but not by Lee Harvey Oswald. It was the mob and the CIA and J. Edgar Hoover. But his own father's assassination, and you just heard him say, they recovered more bullets fired than this man had in his gun. And yet they said it was just the lone shooter, Sirhan Sirhan, and he's saying no. It was a Manchurian candidate. I interviewed Robert Barrett Kaiser, who wrote the book way back, the year after this happened, called Sirhan, JFK Must Die. And in an hour-long interview, he said that Sirhan Sirhan had been hypnotized. He had been put into this mental state. And yet the media has never touched that. You realize the media has never questioned JFK, Robert F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, his assassinations. They never allowed it to be a conspiracy. That's how powerful the deep state is. So the very people who can keep the truth from coming out, do you think they're going to tell you the truth about COVID-19 or what you could do for yourself? Or are they setting you up to take the expensive drugs that are experimental and the vaccines that are extremely experimental, but unlike any other vaccine ever done, can give your body messages, can tell your body cells what to do?
I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.